From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Republican Congressman Trey Radel of Fort Myers announced a leave of absence last week after news broke he was busted by federal officials for cocaine possession in late October. Republican leaders in Florida, including Governor Rick Scott, are calling for his resignation. Tell us what you think. Plus, a Republican and Democrat in the Florida legislature are teaming up to pass a bill that could raise the speed limit on Florida's interstate highways from 70 miles per hour to 75. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. I'm Ashley Lopez. Thanks for joining us. A bipartisan team of state lawmakers want to raise the speed limit on Florida's interstate highways from 70 miles per hour to 75. They say a newly proposed bill would put Florida in line with more than a dozen other states and would set speed limits to the speed people are actually driving. But skeptics say it could make Florida's roadways more dangerous. We'll speak with road safety experts. But first, Republican Congressman Trey Radel of Fort Myers announced a leave of absence this week. The freshman congressman was sentenced to 1 year's probation for misdemeanor possession of cocaine. Charges were brought against the Tea Party favorite after federal officials caught him buying 3.5 grams of cocaine during a sting operation in late October. Many in Radel's district, as well as Governor Rick Scott and other party leaders, are asking Radel to resign. Radel announced last week that he is taking time off from Congress for substance abuse treatment at an inpatient facility here in Southwest Florida. He told reporters during a press conference he was deeply sorry and is working towards redemption. Radel said he believes he can earn back trust from his family and his constituents. He did not mention resigning. Joining me now in the studio is Peter Bergeron, a political science professor here at Florida Gulf Coast University. Welcome back, Professor.
Thank you very much, Ashley.
And also with us by phone is Betty Parker. She's a political columnist for the Fort Myers News Press and also a frequent guest on the show. Welcome back, Betty.
Hi, Ashley. Thanks for inviting me.
And if you would like to share your thoughts on how you think Congressman Trey Radel is handling this all, give us a call. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Or you can comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or email at golfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Okay, Peter, I'll start with you. And Betty, I'd like you to answer this question, too. But the big question here is, do you think Congressman Radel is being honest with us and honest with himself and saying that he can possibly redeem himself with voters before his looming reelection and even the primary?
Well, he may be honest with himself, but he's not in the realm of political reality. There's no way he could win a Republican primary, from my estimation. Betty has seen more elections than I have, but in the 11 and a half years here, I don't see it.
And that matter of political reality is the crux here. And, of course, you know, there are a few people, I read their letters in the papers, who say, you know, they believe in forgiveness. And right now we're looking at maybe 8-10 people who are giving serious consideration to getting in this race. Under any normal circumstances, you would think that an arrest for a drug conviction, and that's what we're looking at here. It's not about the alcohol. It's about the drug arrest. That's unforgivable. But the chance remains, if you got 6 or 7 people in a primary, someone can win with a very small number of votes.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, 2 years ago, Trey Radel won with just under 30% of the vote. And so, as you suggest, Betty, perhaps as many as a dozen, surely a half a dozen, why 20 to 25% may nominate a Republican candidate to replace or to run in the general election.
That's certainly true.
Yeah, go ahead, Betty.
Of course, the question remains whether he resigns or not.
Yeah. What do you guys think? I mean, and he'd also be going at this without any party support. I mean, you know, Lenny Curry, the Republican Party of Florida chair, is asking him to resign. Governor Rick Scott asked him to resign yesterday. I mean, how many politicians would stick around in this situation? And, you know, what's going to happen if he doesn't? I mean, first of all, do you think he will have to, considering the what's in front of him? And
go ahead,
do you think
Betty.
He will?
Well, he doesn't have to. He's not required to. The decision is up to him. But as you say, he's toxic in Republican circles. There will, Rick Scott does not want to campaign for reelection with a guy who's been arrested for cocaine. And the party money is not going to be there. The party will isolate him. If he stays in, he'll be marginalized to the point where he's barely considered credible. Now, the bigger question to me is the timing. I think at some point he's going to have to resign, or he will resign. The political reality means he will resign. But the timing issue, I think, is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I would agree. The timing, whether it's before January 1st, after January 1st, which would depend on then a special election, which would mean a nominating primary. I guess in my years of observing elections, campaigns, and politicians, I have never seen a tsunami like this calling for an individual's retirement or resignation and surviving. Is it doable? Well, it's possible, but is it probable? I don't think so. You've seen political elite statewide. You've seen his own party leaders. You've seen opinion leaders. You've already, as we've suggested, a number of pretenders to the office. Even his political base is there may be coming out. But in this climate, in this environment, any defense, it's just a total it's sucked all the political support out of the air for him. And what I think others wonder is there more yet to come? Not to filibuster, but I think Betty's absolutely right. It's the issue is not alcoholism at all. It's the cocaine. And that just sends shivers up people's spine.
Yeah, I think he's really been really deft in handling, like, kind of averting the attention from the cocaine. He announced he was an alcoholic, and he's going into treatment for alcoholism. Is this good politics, or, you know, is he just trying to, like, make sure that cocaine sort of stays out of the front page? Or, I mean, or is he being honest with us? Is cocaine not really such a big deal? I mean, it would seem that if he found a dealer within a year of being in Congress, there might be a bigger issue here. And any of you can jump in and answer this.
I agree with you that he was, that was a very nice word. He was very deft. He was very clever in the way that he totally focused all his comments on the alcoholism. And everybody can, everybody sympathized with him regardless. And many people know alcoholics. And this is, it's not illegal. I mean, he never really spoke to the fact that he was, in fact, arrested for a very serious illegal drug. And that's just, in reality, you tend to think politically that's not recoverable. But going back to that timing issue, I just wanted to say that. We would absolutely have a special election if he quit before January 1. But if he waits and doesn't resign until after January 1, then the governor has the discretion to call one. And the timing of how long he might wait after that, to after January, to resign has a lot of impact on a lot of people.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that also, in addition to the statement of focusing, deflecting the cocaine to alcoholism, the introduction of his mother, his wife, his son, you know, stand up straight and say, look, I mean, he did, but he was asking for forgiveness based on crutches that seemed to still be there. I think maybe he may try if he's 30 days in recovery and makes a statement, he may make an attempt or try to hold on to his seat. But, we'll wait and see whether he will or not.
And we have an email from Barbara in Fort Myers. She asked, maybe he just wants to keep his salary and benefits as long as possible. What do you guys think?
Well, that would have to be put into the equation.
You wonder what else would he do. The longer he said, I believe if I'm speaking now from memory, I think he said while he was in rehab, he would donate his salary, but the time, we're not sure how long that's going to be. And if he stayed in office, he would still continue to collect his salary and his benefits.
Yeah, some health insurance comes into play whenever you check into rehab, I think. And I want all our listeners to know, let us know what they think about Radel's recent criminal behavior and also how he's handling it. You can call us at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK, or you can send an email like Barbara did to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. And Betty, I want to talk about one of your recent columns. It's sort of like the electoral prospects here. This is a solidly red district that Radel's in. So really all he has to worry about is a primary. And already there are some Republicans sort of eyeing this seat. So talk to me about some of the names that have come up so far and what this means, I guess, for his even possible tenure in Congress.
Yes. Lizbeth Benacristo has said she's seriously interested. Chauncey Goss has said he's seriously interested. The gentleman from Naples, Mr. Donald, who did so well down there as a first-time candidate, he has said he's interested. And several business people, other first-time candidates, are interested. And don't forget about Connie Mack. And this is going to be one of the more interesting factors, I think, because Trey and Connie Mack are very close friends. Connie helped Trey a lot, and very early on, when Trey was even first thinking about running for Congress, and the Macks and Connie and the whole family and their supporters helped Trey throughout his campaign. I don't think Connie would run against Trey, but I would, the timing, again, that timing question of when he resigns, how that affects Mac and all these other people, I think those questions are being talked about at a lot of very high levels.
I would agree, and my guess is there's other people interested as well. One of the things at this stage would be the candidates is what kind of organization have they had in the past and or what kind of money are they able to raise, and that would be a key, particularly if you had half a dozen or more, and particularly if you had four really serious candidates. This congressional race could be easily $500,000 or more.
Yeah, I mean, but you kind of would have to be, it would have to be a personal thing that would stop a Republican who was interested in the seat to stop from running if Tradel's still in. I mean, I can imagine almost anyone can beat him at this point. I mean, I don't think that, it's sort of open to anyone at this point. And I heard that the Miami Herald said that even Lizbeth Benacristo would be like a big blow to his campaign if he were to run, because she's such a she's so liked in the area that really anyone who's even marginally liked could topple, Trey Radel at this point. What do you guys think?
Betty? He's certainly vulnerable. Yeah. I would say so. Quick election benefits people with who can raise money fast and have high name ID.
Yeah, I think if he does not resign, he'd just be considered a non-entity. His ability, unless the vote was split or unless there was, something that would change between now and that I can't foresee, is at least from political support, there hasn't been one significant party leader, political elite, his support has just closed the door. It's just nothing there. So if he doesn't resign, it just doesn't. The only thing that really hurts is the idea of representation here and his reputation.
Yeah, and I want to get to that question because that's a really important question. But first, we have an email from Judy, and I see a sort of running theme in our questions here. She's asked, is Trey eligible for a lifetime pension? Will he still be sort of on the government payroll, or is he at least receiving benefits in Congress? I don't know the answer to that. Do you know?
He will not. He has to serve 5 years to receive a government pension.
Right.
So he will receive salary and benefits as long as he's a member of the House.
Right. Oh, go ahead, Betty. Do you have
to? No, that's correct. You would have to be in more than two terms to receive a pension.
That's right.
Great. And we had sort of started this question, but first I want to remind everyone that you can call us if you want to share your thoughts on how you think Congressman Trey Radel's handling all this. The phone lines are open for your comments at 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Or you can send us an email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org like some of you already have. So what does this mean for the people of Southwest Florida that we have a congressman who's sort of still in office but on a leave of absence, in terms of votes in Congress? What is the political ramifications of that in terms of representation for people in Southwest Florida? How does this affect us all? Go ahead, Peter.
Go ahead, Betty.
Well, in one sense, you know, congressmen and his congressmen do get sick. They have heart attacks. They have extended illnesses. They leave. And then, no, you just have to hope people will step in. The staff does what staff does. But as far as votes, maybe you hope some of his allies will try and push the agenda, will try and do what they can to help him out. At this point, I'm wondering how many allies Trey has. There are certain issues coming up. The water bill is a big one, where he is likely to not be there. Now, that's an issue that some other people may step up, but we're also in serious competition with the East Coast of Florida. And not having a voice during all this really hurts us, and you just have to wonder where the help for Southwest Florida is going to come from.
Yeah, I think there's a, in addition to what Betty was so adroit at looking at, is the from a day-to-day standpoint, people who have Social Security problems or perhaps VA problems, the administrative staff and what we might think is the constituent services will continue, and that probably won't be disrupted very much because of his offices here in Cape Coral and in Washington, D.C. But it's the sense of representation. It's the concept that we're going to have a voice on the floor in the committees, that those are the things that become important. And also that our seat is something that is relatively new and also something that the voters really covet. And so there's an identity here that all of a sudden we've lost that identity. And it's going to be missing on the, there in Washington.
Yeah. Two other points on that, if I can add on to what Peter was saying. With Trey's political future so much in doubt, two of his top staff people have already departed.
Mm-hmm.
How many of his other staff are going to stick around when their job security is somewhat questionable at this point? You just have to wonder how many staff will stay and how many will find other more secure jobs. But that idea of not having representation is also critical because, you know, there's no requirement. There's been a lot of confusion about this, I've read out in the public. If he waited until after January 1 to resign, the governor is not required to call a special election. But from all political realities, he most likely would if it's relatively early, because you know, the voters here just won't stand for being without political representation in Washington for an extended period of time. Mm-hmm. It does nothing to help Scott to let that stay empty.
Yeah.
And we have to keep in mind that this is Scott's congressional, this is the governor's congressional district. And frankly, I was a little surprised that he waited until they came to his door with the issue as opposed to being out in front on it. But anyway,
I think a lot of the way it was put to me by people who didn't, were involved but didn't want to be named, they wanted to give Trey time to go through. It's sort of like a grieving process. A lot has happened to him very fast, and they wanted to give him time to step up, do the right thing. And I think that limit has about been reached.
Yeah. And I'm going to move on to a caller. We have Anne from Venice. She wants to share her thoughts with this. How's it going, Anne?
Fine. Thank you very much for taking my call. I think it in my mind, this goes to a larger issue as well, in the fact that he was, in a way, representing the Tea Party. And are the Tea Party people not vetting the candidates well that they are supporting? And so putting someone up that has a problem, I mean, we all have difficulties in life, but he is representing their views, and I think it's a bit hypocritical in a way when we support somebody who has issues and they're espousing something other than that.
Yeah, and your question's actually very similar to Barbara in Fort Myers, who asked, should we view the wisdom of the local party when it comes to vetting a candidate? That same sort of thing. What did we all miss? And do you guys want to handle Ann's question?
Well, I would just respond by saying that, you know, Trey Radel went to the Tea Party, and he was, I guess, the first and spoke to their political issues and ideology, and so I don't think any party or any faction within a party vets their candidates. It would be different if we had a nominating method process where the party actually controls the nomination, but the voters do. And sure, the Tea Party were instrumental, but they didn't have necessarily the final word.
And some level, I've heard this raised before, and some people have talked about, well, the local Republicans should do more better background checks on people. Well, first, background checks will turn up arrests. A background check would not have found that that Trey Radel is going to be arrested for an illegal drug. But, you know, the opposition now does very sophisticated opposition research, and you would not believe the detail that people go into, the oppositions will go into on their opponent candidates. They hire professional private investigators to go through their background records, and a lot of it is some of it's legitimate, and some of it's just, well, this guy got in a fist fight in high school 20 years ago, so how important is that? You know, there's just only so far a background check will take you.
Yeah,
I would agree. But also there's the assumption based on Ann's comment or question was that, well, he had these problems before he went to Washington, and maybe he did and maybe he didn't.
Yeah.
How do you know?
Yeah. Well, there were some reports that someone he worked with did mention it, but I mean, it's hard to sort of verify that sort of like now in hindsight, like, oh, I saw it all along, that sort of thing. Well, anyways, I'm moving on to another question. I have Charlie on the line from Fort Myers. Go ahead, Charlie. Thank you for waiting.
When you were mentioning possible, in the middle of the toothbrush. When you were mentioning possible candidates, you didn't mention Chauncey Goss. How come?
No, we did.
I thought I did.
Yeah, we did.
Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe I tuned in. I didn't hear the name, but yeah, I'm sure he would try again, too. And yeah, I'm sorry I didn't hear that. Well, one more comment.
Go ahead.
I'm from Cincinnati. I'm from Cincinnati myself, and this is not typical behavior from Cincinnati. That's all I had to say. Thank you,
Charlie. All right. Yeah, I think, Chauncey Goss was one of the first people, Betty, that I had heard sort of throw his hat in at least a little bit, right? Like, right? At least the first person, right?
Right.
Yeah. All right. And so I'm going to remind, thank you all for calling in. And I'd like to remind all our other listeners that the phone lines are open. It's 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. And so let's see. I'm going to sort of, I guess we already covered, you know, how to, sort of the media's role in this, too, and sort of vetting a candidate. Did we? I know we talked about the party doing this, but there is also a role. Barbara in Fort Myers, this is her question. She said there's also a part of the media to do this. Why didn't the media catch this? Do you guys have any thoughts on this?
Well, Petty, maybe best to reflect on that since that has been a career for her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do know that the news press does background check. I mean, they check court records. You know, we talk to people. You check court records. You look at what at their business career. You look at what they've done. There was, you know, I think Trey would be the first to tell you his coverage was not all positive leading up to the election. There were things in his background that were not necessarily all rosy, that were written about, that he didn't like at all. But yet, I don't know, you hear all kinds of rumors, and then there's a matter of being able to confirm rumors. You can't print just things that you just hear as rumor. You have to be able to confirm it, and that's the tricky part.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that there was any dropping of the ball, so to say, by the media and particularly the print media and perhaps the television media, because he had been an anchor. Maybe he had gotten a pass in some cases there, but I don't think so. Without the gumshoes peering into the bedroom, that's just not going to happen.
Yeah. And one of my questions actually being brought up from an email, Craig, I don't know where he's from. He said, isn't it hypocritical to come down so hard on poor users, blaming his own alcoholism and... I said, if that's okay while the pressures of poverty, if not. Okay, I think what he's trying to – I should have read that first. I think what he's coming at – I remember actually something that got a lot of media attention, especially in like TV shows like The Daily Show and The Colbert Report, was this idea that Trey Radel was one of a group of Tea Party Republicans who voted to, I guess – have drug testing for food stamps, sort of coming down on people who are poor and also users, while also struggling with alcoholism himself. I mean, do you guys find this hypocritical? I mean, is this something that he's going to have to answer for too?
Well, if being hypocritical was a trumpet, Congress would be a brass band. it's hard, in politics, not to be on a number of different sides on issues, and it's not just Trey Radel. That's the nature of the beast, oftentimes.
Yeah,
and hypocrisy is one of the cardinal sins, but you know, quite often you'll see Congress voting on laws that they affect a lot of other people, but they don't affect them.
Yeah. That's a great point.
That's true. Yeah.
I'm going to take another call. We have Terry from Naples. Go ahead, Terry. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you. Thank you very much for taking my call. I appreciate it. Just a couple questions and a comment. I don't think that would have been a habit that he would have acquired after he went to Washington. I think that would have been a habit that you would acquire in young adulthood. So I think it was something that actually started before the whole trip to D.C.
Yeah, and you're talking about the cocaine habit?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's one of the pressures that would force you to find a cocaine connection to buy what's called an 8-ball, an eighth of an ounce, within 10 months. That takes a lot of gall. But the other thing is, too, is I saw a picture yesterday of him in rehabilitation, and he's smoking a cigarette and he's drinking a cup of coffee. Two stimulants, and he's in there for a stimulant. Is that replacing one thing with another? I'm just not sure. I'll hang up and just listen to your comments.
All right, thank you, Terry. Do you guys want to?
I was curious myself about how much communication Trey had with the outside world. Yeah, there are all kinds of rehab programs. Some are extremely strict, and you don't get cigarettes, you don't get coffee, you don't get to see anybody outside. And there are others that go at it from different angles. I just don't know enough about this particular rehab program that he's in.
Yeah, I you know, it's beyond the limit of my expertise to comment on either of his the idea of a habit and the idea of smoking and coffee. Smoking's not going to be good for his health, but I think perhaps that would be low on his priorities right now. And coffee. Well, it's a stimulant, but
you can only concentrate on so much, I think.
Yeah,
and quitting coffee is no small feat.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I have another caller. It's sort of in the same vein. John from Fort Myers. Thank you for waiting. Go ahead.
Well, I think this is more of a medical problem than a criminal problem, and I've been somewhat through what he did when I was informed my wife was going to die of cancer. I needed help, and my kids got me there. Now, I don't know that anybody got him help. Obviously not, because he tried to self-medicate, is the way I look at it. And let's not forget, when he got married, the day he got married, his mother choked to death at the wedding party. And that's why I relate my situation to his. And I think people are just being a little too judgmental that, he's been a drug user all his life. When we get too many things piled up on us, good or bad, we tend to lose control. And I didn't even know that I was losing control till my kids just said, you need help. So we've got to back off a little and not be so judgmental about this man. It'll take, according to what I went through, the first couple of months I started to straighten up, but it took a year and a half before I could get off the antidepressants that I was given. So I feel that we should just give the man a chance. And as far as representation here, I've lived here since 1963, and I don't remember when we had a representative from here that did anything for this area. So lack of representation till next November election doesn't bother me at all. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, John. He is in a different position than all of us. You know, if we know one of us goes to rehab, it's very different than a congressman, you know. Do you guys have any comments? Betty, Peter?
Somebody told me, I find as I get older, I tend to be less judgmental. On the other hand, a lot of people go through a lot of problems and issues, and they don't go out and buy eight balls on the street. This is a congressman. So, as Rick Scott said, we hold our elected officials to a high standard. And maybe if he had gotten help before he got arrested, it might be a little different situation.
Well, I was struck and pleased that John has in recovery, or at least was able to. His family was able to help him through his problems. Everyone reached, at least in Trey's case, what perhaps was the bottom, because he was exposed, and he must have not only did he buy some, but he had some at his house. So he I don't know if stockpiling is the right word, but he didn't want to run out.
Yeah. And I'm going to just ask one more question. We're coming to the end of this segment. So I want to talk about he actually announced, those charges were announced. I mean, it happened 3 weeks prior from what I understand, but the week that his charges were announced, it kind of came at an interesting time. We were sort of watching that Toronto Mayor Rob Ford sort of like fall apart in a very public way after being caught with crack, or being, I guess there was a video of him taking crack. And, you know, the way Trey Radel sort of handled this situation compares very differently with how Rob Ford, you know, has handled all this. In a way, I mean, we can cut, I guess, Trey Radel some slack, right? I mean, this was a way more graceful way of sort of admitting you were wrong and that sort of thing. Do you guys see, I mean, since we have this comparison, why not? Do you see a big difference? Should we give him credit for that or not?
Go ahead, Betty.
It was textbook. I mean, I've talked to so many consultants who say the way he handled it was textbook perfect. He stressed the alcohol. He apologized. He took responsibility. He said, I'm sorry, I'm getting help, and all of that. At the same time, it came after his arrest for an illegal drug. And that part is what a lot of people are struggling with.
Yeah, I would not want to make the comparison with the buffoon in Toronto.
No.
Trey obviously is not in that category, and he's a long way from it. And I would just associate my comments along with Betty's about the textbook approach. In fact, he has at least a PR firm that is handling it. I think that if he's going to save himself, one of the things he needs to do is have a very short period of time in recovery and then try to answer every possible question that could be put to him. I think that's the only and not a 5 or 10 minute press conference, but I think he has potentially one a small shot at saving his career, but I would say he's, that is not very likely, but.
Yeah. Well, that's all the time we have for this portion of the program. I want to thank my guest, Peter Bergerson, a political science professor at Florida Gulf Coast University, and Betty Parker, a political columnist with the News Press. Thank you both. We're taking a short break, but when we return, a look at a bill recently introduced for the upcoming legislative session that would raise Florida's speed limit on interstate highways from 70 miles per hour to 75. That's just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to WGCU NPR for Southwest Florida.